This podcast is supported by Understood Explains. As parents, we are often having to figure out things as we go, and that is very true for our children's education. And to help you out, I want to tell you about a podcast called Understood Explains. This season is hosted by teacher and special education expert Uliana Ortube, and she discusses all the things you'd want to know about individual education plans, or IEPs, what they are, why they're needed, who benefits from them, and what to expect when you have meetings with teachers. I could have really used this podcast when my son had an IEP for speech when he was six. I was overwhelmed trying to understand the process and what everything meant. The episode on Understood Explains, Does My Child Need an IEP, was the kind of info that would have really helped me get the most out of the educational support of the IEP for my son. And if you need that kind of support, I really recommend this podcast. To listen to Understood Explains, search for Understood Explains in your podcast app. That's Understood Explains. Welcome to Mom in Mind. I'm perinatal psychologist and host Dr. Kat. There's more to the story than just postpartum depression, and this podcast aims to share it all. From personal stories and lived experience to experts who break down the ups and downs of life from getting pregnant, pregnancy, perinatal loss, and postpartum adjustment to parenthood. While this is not psychotherapy or medical advice, it is all of the stuff you ever wanted to know about mental health and new parenthood. Welcome back to Mom in Mind. I'm your host, Dr. Kat. On our episode today, we are getting into sensory overload and overstimulation. And our guest, Holly Peretz, who is a pediatric occupational therapist, is going to share with us what she understands about overstimulation and how we can better understand what is going on for us and within us when we're feeling overstimulated. And she also gives some really great and useful tips on how to start managing some of that overload. Holly has over 14 years of experience working with children and parents as a therapist and parent educator, and she supports parents and clinicians in creating a childhood that bakes in the science of what makes toddlers thrive in this critical period of development. She is also the hostess of the annual Toddler Play Conference and the Thriving in the First Year Summit. I know so many of us can really relate to this feeling of being overstimulated and having a lot to deal with in any given time. But what I love about what Holly shares with us is the why some of that is happening, and it gives some insight, which I think can really be helpful in understanding how to be more supportive to ourselves. So let's meet Holly. Welcome, Holly. Thank you so much for being here.
Sure. Thank you so much for having me.
I'm really excited for our conversation today because I know from the parents and clients that I meet with, especially those who have little ones who need a little extra support, how important occupational therapy is for all of them. And I also know that not everybody knows exactly what happens in occupational therapy. So I'm happy to get into some of that with you as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I'll admit that it took me about a year of actually studying occupational therapy to actually understand what it is. And that's kind of the big joke of occupational therapy, because it's a very dynamic profession and we work in a lot of different contexts. So it's kind of understanding what occupational therapy means in each of these. How I like to describe it to people is, like, when you think of a physical therapist, you know that their tool is physical, right? They're working on the physical side in a therapeutic framework. And occupational therapy, we're not career coaches, although it sounds like that. What we are doing is supporting people towards their occupations, towards the things that they do in their daily life. So in an adult context, like in a hospital setting, this might be somebody who's just had a stroke and we're working with them to get back to being able to drive. But with children, we're working on the occupations that are involved in the life of a child, which is play, which is interacting with their caregiver. As they get older, this becomes more academic and sport and social focused. But we're really supporting all of these, that scaffolding, that developmental scaffolding, in order to support them to get to the point that they can access the environments and the things that they want to be able to do.
Well, thank you for that explanation. That is very helpful. And you're right. I think the confusion is maybe just the term initially, that it is confused with work and things like that. So great. I mean, this is integral then to just functioning, sometimes at a fundamental level, but and then all the way up into more complex things. Yeah, that covers quite a broad range. So how would you describe how you work with your patients? Like if you were telling somebody who's brand new to understanding occupational therapy, what is it that you're doing with a child or the family?
Yeah, well, this really depends on the child and what their need is and why they are seeing occupational therapist specifically. I mean, we often get confused for play therapists, right? But play therapy is its own profession within itself. But we do use play as one of our primary tools as pediatric occupational therapists, at least, in terms of reaching, if our goal is, say, towards like developmental aspects, maybe something muscular, we'll be using play like really integrally in there to reach those goals. But a lot of the time we're working on just really functional things as well, like brushing teeth or learning. Like I remember once I worked with a boy who was school age, and one of the big goals for the year was that he would be able to catch the bus home by himself at that age group. So we're really working very holistically, depending on what the reason for referral is. So often we are really working very closely with educators and within those educational frameworks or within healthcare frameworks. So together with doctors and medical staff, but then we're also really, because when we look at our children, we don't just see them as like these insular single figures. We see them as like what I like, technically we call them like dyads or triads, but I like to call them like peas in a pod. Mm-hmm. We see them really integrally with their families. So any decision that's being made, any goals that are being set, and also the methods in terms of how we reach those goals are always coming together with the families. And every family is so individual. The way that those goals can be reached is really going to be individual according to the context and to the family's wishes.
Sure. Are you primarily getting referrals or people being referred to you through medical systems or medical providers? Or do you also finding that people are seeking out your services just independently?
Yeah, well, I have quite a unique experience in that I've lived in different countries and changed contexts in terms of the way that pediatric occupational therapy is practiced. So I've worked within hospital settings where it's, you know, primarily referral from a medical personnel. I've worked also within private practice settings, which is then again, often it's coming from or education or from medical staff that you're getting those referrals. But then my deep love, like the place that I really love working, is within preschool settings and school settings and daycare settings, where we're coming really alongside also the education staff.
I was curious how people get connected to you. I'm thinking in part of, let's say, people who are listening right now. There for sure are people who are already being supported by an occupational therapist for their child's development. But if somebody is hearing what we're talking about today and is thinking that they or their child might need the support, how would they even go about it? I guess in our in our system here in the US, maybe talking to their doctor.
Yeah, pediatricians are always like the great place to start, especially if it's for your child. But I know for early intervention, so for this like young group of children, you can also directly refer yourself or just go through your early intervention system of your state for any kind of assessment that you would, even if it's something that your pediatrician hasn't referred to and something that a parent is curious about, they can also go through that route.
Fantastic. So how is it that you are supporting the family in this process, as well as, like, let's say if the child is your primary client?
Absolutely. Well, I think the occupation, the thing that we do of being parents, is such a like a huge focus in these years, especially with young children, right? It's like everything else kind of takes a backseat to this big job that we're doing of parenting, because it is very time consuming, very money consuming, very emotionally consuming. Yep. So definitely the more we can support children in whatever's going on with them, it also like it has this kind of spin-off effect within the family as well. But how I really got to this topic, like what we're talking about today, sensory processing or sensory overwhelm for parents, is because I became a parent myself. Mm-hmm. And just understanding this thing of what we do and how this affects who we are, and really the integratedness, if that's a word, the connectedness of the experience of like changing biology and how our bodies actually really influence what we can be doing. And got me so interested in the experience of sensory overwhelm because I experienced it myself. And I felt like I've worked with children for at that time over 10 years, and I've been around crying and tantrums and all of it, and never felt this way inside myself. Like this never affected me. This never impacted my occupations or the things that I do as much as it does right now. And why is that? So I started to get really, really curious about understanding more in terms of the biology of what is changing, and then understanding the aspect of sensory processing and how that's all working together in the step of motherhood or the process of becoming a mother.
Right.
This podcast is sponsored by Paired. One of the things I hear weekly is how clients feel distant or not as connected to their partners, and also how they'd like to feel heard and seen by their partners. So for all you partners out there, it might be time to try Paired. It's an app that helps couples connect in a meaningful way, especially for couples who either feel disconnected, don't have time to sit down together, or who are just wanting to keep the connection going. This app is great. My husband and I are on it, and one of the things I love are the games where I answer a set of fun or interesting questions, and then he does the same, and we see where our answers line up or are different. It's a really cool way of learning something new about him, even though we've been together over 20 years. And there are a bunch of other great questions geared towards connection and understanding and intimacy that, when you share your answers, can help you and your partner understand each other better. Share the love this Mother's Day by going to paired.com/mind to get a 7-day free trial and 25% off if you sign up for a subscription. That's paired.com/mind to sign up today. Let's give the gift of connection this Mother's Day. A happier relationship starts here.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Thank you for sharing that. It's always fascinating to me how people come to do what they do, but also once you're already in a specialty, becoming even more specialized within it. I just love when there's these intersections of nuanced understandings of things that are related, but not necessarily have always been put together. Maybe intuitively we understand it, but cognitively we're just still trying to figure it out. It just happens so much in new parenting and new parenthood. They're just, you know, this whole new world opens up, and then you have to consider so much more in your own world while you're trying to understand the world of your child. And I want to understand a little bit more about what you mean by sensory overload. How would you describe that?
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's first talk about sensory processing. What does it really mean? I find often when I talk about sensory processing, people feel like it's a bit like woo, like it's a bit like out there. It's like something that isn't science, right? Like that's often the response that I get. And I just want to make clear that that is as far from the truth as we can go. Sensory processing is one of our core abilities that our body does. Right. And it's not something that is a mindset. It's something that is actually happening within our body. So what happens? Let's talk about the process of what is sensory processing. We experience something through our sensory systems. It goes into our brain interprets it, and then tells us the correct response. Mm-hmm. So this is from everything, from tasting to sight to hearing. But then there are also three areas of sensory processing that are a little bit less known, which is vestibular, your proprioceptive system, and also interoception. But before we get there, just understanding that sensory processing is basically the process of how your brain makes you able to function within the world. So we can't kind of take away sensory processing, right? It's like very integral to our basic biology. And it's not the same as the actual function of an organ. So we see because we have sight, because our eyes are able to see. Yes. But sensory processing is the thing that makes us understand that this is a sight that is overwhelming to our bodies or just possibly scary. It's a lion running at you. So the sensory processing component isn't just the vision, but how the vision is interpreted and filtered in terms of like neural networking. So when we talk about sensory overload, what we're talking about really is a lot of sensory information coming in at once that is causing our nervous system to feel overloaded, to feel overwhelmed, and to push us into a fight or flight or freeze mechanism. So often when we talk about this, people relate it, because part of the autistic diagnosis is very linked with sensory processing, people often think of it like that, like, oh, someone walks into a busy crowded shopping center and it's like a light switch goes off and they suddenly have a meltdown. But actually, while this is true, and this is one component of sensory overload or sensory processing, this other component isn't a light switch. It's more like a cup that is just like constantly being filled and not emptied. Mm-hmm. So if you think about the life of a parent, we are, you know, having a lot more clutter on the floor than normal, whether it's toys or whether it's that baby stage where suddenly there's cots and there's all these things that you didn't have in your home before. Right. We are having a lot more noise in terms of whether it's crying or children that are kicking balls around and giggling and running and all of that. There's a lot more movement happening. So our bodies are also getting, our vestibular sense is really, our heads are moving around a lot, which is impacting those like little follicles inside of your ears, which is telling your body where it is in space. That's your vestibular sense. So all of our sensory areas are just being stimulated a lot. And because of the nature of parenting, there also isn't a lot of naturally built in filters that are kind of emptying out our sensory cup, which brings us back to like that calm, alert, rested state. So it's kind of like that experience of being a cup that is just like on the like tip of being full and just always kind of spilling over a little bit. That's how I like to think of sensory overload in this context of parenting.
Yeah, that's a fantastic explanation. Thank you so much for that. I like the way you describe things and explain things. It really makes it so easy to understand and kind of apply. And you had mentioned the vestibular, and then there were two other types of processing. If you can go into a little bit kind of like the concrete of what those are as well.
So the second one, there was vestibular and then proprioceptive. So proprioceptive is basically the sensation that we get from our muscles and joints when they experience resistance. So like if I hit a ball, I know that I hit the ball and how hard I hit the ball because of my proprioceptive sense. And that's like filtering through the muscles. So if you think about someone that doesn't have or struggles in terms of their proprioceptive sense, it can almost feel like they are covered in bubble wrap and like they're not really sure where their body is, right? Mm-hmm. It's like hard to sense if they're stepping too hard or too soft. Mm-hmm. I actually had a bit of this when I was a kid, and I remember my tennis teacher always being like, you don't need to hit so hard because I would just whack that ball. But that's part of our proprioceptive sense. And then the other one is interoception. So this is basically, it's one of the sensory areas that is still really emerging in terms of research and our understanding of it, but it's basically our internal awareness of what is going on inside of our bodies. So the experience of feeling hungry, needing the toilet, knowing if you're hot or cold, that would fall into interoception.
Okay. And then vestibular, you were describing as this is more auditory.
So it's different to auditory, but it also involves our ears. So it's basically when your head moves, there's little like hair follicles that are inside of your ears that tell your body where it is in space. Mm-hmm. So this one, I think, is a really one that we forget about. But really, as new parents, when you're like bending up and down, doing all that bending, you are really activating your vestibular sense. And we can go into this a little bit more just now, but there are ways that we can activate these systems. It's actually like emptying that cup. It's like actually very, our bodies are just designed in the most incredible way that these things that can alert us can actually also relax us and bring us down. So vestibular is one of those, and that it actually has a huge potential for calming our nervous systems. But if we are doing like rigid kind of movements, that it actually alerts us more and keeps you in that like cup full on the brink of getting into fight and flight or freeze.
Sure. Great. Thank you for that. And the sensory processing that you mentioned before, I heard and agree with what you're saying, that a lot of people associate it with a diagnosis of autism. But, and I should say, there are other experiences or conditions or diagnoses that where the sensory processing is impacted as well. There's a full line of just like we are always sensory processing, whether there's like a diagnosis or a functional challenge or not, it's there. And so you don't have to necessarily fit some diagnostic criteria to be impacted. And certainly if there is already something that you have that have been dealing with or living with in your life that has impacted your capacity for sensory processing, and then you add all of this new stuff on top of it, that's just going to be so much harder.
Absolutely. Yeah. I like to think of it like one of the models that we use in occupational therapy is the person, the environment, and the occupation, like three interlocking circles. So if you look at the person, just the person itself, we all kind of have, you don't have to be sensitive across every single area of your sensory makeup, your sensory profile. You can have one slight sensitivity or one area where you're a little bit sensitive. And often as adults, we have these and we just sail through them because we've learned how to change our environment so that these things don't bother us. One of the examples that I always give is like my husband, he can reverse the car while playing music and having a conversation. This for me is like, it's no go, no go. Yeah. It's like I'm reversing, everything must be silent.
Yes.
And no one moves. Uh-huh. And some, but on the other hand, he doesn't like to go to the beach. He doesn't like the feeling of sand on his feet, right? So, and sure, we all have these smart things. Like somebody likes cucumbers, somebody doesn't like tomatoes. Like they all, we all have slight tweaks or areas where we're more sensitive or areas where we're more seeking and different kinds of stimulation. That's our person. That's our actual physical makeup. Right. Then we have the environment, and we may find ourselves in environments that are very low stimulation environments, like offices are often like this, whereas something like a school might be a high stimulation environment. And so the environment plays into how everything is experienced. But then there's also the thing of what we are actually doing. So you know, if you look at someone who's trying to do like a job that has huge risk in that job and they're doing it under time pressure, it feels very far removed from saying that this is sensory processing, but the experience in the central nervous system may be the same. Mm. Like that experience of being under high pressure and having a huge time limit of the occupation of the thing that you're doing could easily push you into fight and flight, right? So all of these things are interlocking. And in especially these newborn like time, they kind of all combine in a little bit of a chaotic way because our biology has changed, especially if you are the mother, the person that birthed the baby, there is a lot that is going on biologically within your body. Yeah. But also even for fathers, even for caregivers that are with the babies, there is also changes that are happening within their biology. So the biology is, you know, forcing you to be more responsive to the baby, to like heighten your sensory abilities. And then our environment is very different. Like we talked about, there's more clutter, there's more visual stimulation, and there's a lot more going on in terms of sound in the environment. And then the occupation, the thing that we have to be doing, is also huge risk. Like not... risk is maybe the wrong word, but you know, it's a very important job. Keeping a little child alive is a hugely right. important job. Right. And we also have within that all of our expectations on ourselves and the things that we thought it would be like and all of that. So it all kind of combines into this kind of very can feel chaotic and can feel overwhelming and overstimulating. And that's what a lot of parents are feeling and not really knowing where to put the pin of what is this actually about? Like, is this just about my feelings? Is this just about the clutter? Is this just about the actual raising the baby? Mm-hmm. And kind of circling between these things without finding a lot of solutions or solutions that stick. Mm-hmm. And I think that when we can really look at like the whole person, the occupation, the environment, and bring them together also within the context of sensory processing and sensory overload,
right.
I think that we just can find solutions that feel like they stick a little bit more, like there's less blame on people, ourselves, the things around us. Mm-hmm. And we can just like push more into understanding this new phase, because on one hand, it changes a lot, right? Like some of those, there's an age where when you hear a baby cry, you won't start lactating because your body is less sensitive to that thing. Your biology kind of filters back down as well. But the environment and the occupation, the thing of actually raising kids, although they grow, it still can feel much the same. Like my kids are now, I always get their ages wrong. but they are nearly five and nearly seven. And I still experience this thing of sensory overwhelm. And there's still a lot of noise, a lot of overstimulation. So some of these techniques and some of this understanding just really helps me still, even if it was like most pertinent in those baby years.
Absolutely. I think as you mentioned something in there that made me think about just psychologically speaking, you know, since that's primarily where I'm sitting with people is understanding, you know, how, what's happening for them as a result of all of these things. The blame, I think that's what you said. It's not understood like, oh, I'm, you know, overstimulated right now necessarily, or I'm having overload. It's often more interpreted as if there's something wrong with me. Why can't I handle this? And or if they're not already in that headspace, it can result in feelings of intense anxiety, sometimes even like a ragey type of a feeling, just like you can't make the stimulation stop. And then it has this impact and this effect. So to your point about this, like, I think interoceptive sensory, I don't know the answer to this, but like how much of that is like psychological input too, that not only are you dealing with all of this input, then you're dealing with what's happening to you internally, physiologically what's happening, but then your own thought process is potentially adding to this overwhelm. And it's just a recipe for just billowing, you know, more and more overload.
Absolutely. You know, often when, like, if we take it away from like the motherhood aspect of this and look at it in terms of, we talked about like autistic children before, I often hear from families that when their children were little, they focused on sensory processing, but then they learned that somehow that switched over to emotional regulation. So it was first sensory regulation, and then it switched over to more of an emotional thing. And then it kind of switches back and forth. So maybe at one point when the child was younger, they gagged on certain food, and that developed into an emotional reaction to food, even when the gag reflex had stopped, and how these two kind of always flick-flack between each other. But actually, if you really like zoom out in terms of understanding human makeup, we have our central nervous system. You know, we learn all of these systems in school. We learn about our veins and our blood system. We learn about like our nerves, actual like nerves on our skin, but we never learn about the central nervous system. And it's such a big one, right? Because it's this, like the emotional side and the sensory side, they're always working together. They're always alongside each other. And the result of like too much on both of these things can be that fight or flight or freeze, or like you're saying as well, like a kind of a pathway of anxiety that can be like traded into. So I definitely agree with this. They are always working together, and these two sides. And I don't know that we need to always separate them either. Like say, this is only about this, or this is only about this, but kind of look at them on the, for this situation, for right now, what is going to be the best support for me? And it might be talk, and it might be something like drinking a cold glass of water, right? So like really trying to understand for each person individually where they are at that moment, like what's going to be the best thing to help right now. And definitely these things can support each other.
Are you overwhelmed by the things that get in the way of you doing what you want to do? Are you looking for ways to simplify life to better align with your values? Do you want to create space in your schedule so you have room for more of the good stuff? Play, joy, relationships, gratitude, and more? If you answered yes to any of these questions, I invite you to check out Edit Your Life, a podcast to help you edit the unnecessary from your life so you have more room to enjoy the awesome. Through episodes with me, Christine Coe, and a range of super smart, compassionate, and thoughtful guests, you'll come away with big picture insights and practical ways to declutter your home, schedule, and mental space without getting bogged down by perfection. I have always believed that small moments and actions matter tremendously. My goal is to help you find agency and space in your life through doable baby steps that will leave you feeling accomplished instead of overwhelmed. Check out Edit Your Life wherever you enjoy your podcasts.
No one told us the truth about parenthood. Why? This is the podcast everyone needed before they had kids, because now that those little ones are here, whew, there is a lot to unpack. I'm Rachel Shepardota, and I am your host for the podcast No One Told Us, where we tell the truth about parenting and let you in on all the stuff you really should have known about before having kids. I am the founder of Hey Sleepy Baby, but this podcast is so much more than sleep. We'll be diving into all the topics that you really care about and need to know while you do your best job raising those adorable, tidy humans. Our goal is to just make you feel less alone and less overwhelmed. There are so many things that no one tells us before becoming a parent, and I think that we should really pull back the curtain on becoming a first-time or second-time mom or dad to share the good, the bad, and the ugly. We'll have a little education, a little fun, and a whole lot of heart that goes into each and every episode. So join me and our amazing guests each week to hear us talk about what no one told us.
So you've mentioned a couple of times as we've been talking that there are solutions, and you just listed a couple of the potential ways to help filter out that cup a bit. Can you talk a little bit more about the tools that you're suggesting?
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the ways that I like to look at this is in terms of that like really full cup, right? We only like see the full cup when it's already overflowing. And when we end up being in the state that we're just like, I want to be in a cold, dark room holding my ears and just rocking myself. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I see you laughing because we can all relate to this on some point, you know, whether it's that or like just trying to have an extended bathroom break to just bring ourselves back down. And before we get to that stage is where we actually need to be like really checking in with ourselves. I think in some of the ways that we see people like naturally responding to this, especially in like this day and age, are actually things that do the opposite of taking away that stimulation. They actually give you more stimulation. Mm-hmm. So for example, doom scrolling on your phone, it actually, if you think about that, it's like, again, it gives you all of this blue light. It's overstimulating you. It's bringing in a lot of emotional things because you're looking at everybody else's highlight reel. It's actually like the worst thing that we can do, but often it's just like that first thing, that easy thing that we can pull to try and just have a moment. And what I always encourage people to do is like think about this a little bit proactively if you can. What is the thing that's going to, for you, that really full cup of all that bending down, picking up, all that noise, all that clutter, all that crying, what is the thing that's going to help you? And often people already have something like, I know that when my house is clean, I just feel better. And there's some people that say, it doesn't really make that much of a difference to me whether it's clean or not, right? Because we're all different and that's okay. What's going to work for somebody else isn't necessarily going to work for you. But in order to like empty that cup, a lot of the things that we would think of as like traditional self-care, and like I sometimes struggle with the term of self-care because I know like for me, going to get my nails done doesn't feel like care. Like it doesn't feel good at all. And that's often like just the thing that people like immediately go to, like some kind of spa association, but like that real self-care, right? That real self-care of like taking care of your body, taking care of what you put into your body, what you're eating, that you're drinking enough, all of that kind of thing. Often those things that are immediately on our list for self-care actually have a huge sensory component as well. So if you think about walking or getting a little bit of exercise, as your feet are like hitting that pavement, there's proprioceptive stimulation coming in. You're walking in a rhythmical way, which is activating your vestibular sense. And like we said, like jarring movement overstimulates, but actually rhythmic movement is very like relaxing and kind of, I like to think of like a little valve on the side of that really full cup. It opens that valve and lets some of that overstimulation out. So if we go in that vein again of like rhythmical movement, things like being on a swing, not necessarily doing like HIIT exercises or like things that are very jarring kind of movement, but like rhythmical movement is really, really good. And similarly, if you think about like for me, something that would be self-care is like a long bath or a nice warm shower. That water touching your skin, again, it's like a soft and soothing and often very rhythmical, whether it's a flow of water or a shower. And that rhythmical movement is, again, just like providing your body with that opening that valve to let things out. Mm-hmm. But there are some things that we can also do within the moment. So whatever you had on your like self-care list, don't get rid of that. Keep that on the list. That's something that we want to be pulling on and giving ourselves more motivation to actually do these things. This is not being selfish. Going for a walk if you need to is a really, really good thing if you can build that into your life. Mm-hmm. But if you are in that moment and you feel like you need to be in that cold, dark room, I'm going to give you just a couple of ideas of things that you can do there as well. So the main one, it's so simple, is stand outside. When we're inside, our voice is bouncing off of the walls. It's providing extra stimulation in our ears. When we are inside, we also have often fluorescent lighting or lighting that is stimulating our eyes in a different way. Whereas when we are outside, we have like open, wide open spaces that also it's very different in the visual stimulation. Yes. And the sound that we are experiencing is very different. Natural light also has a more soothing effect. And like extra bonus now that we're heading towards the end of the year, if there's a little bit of a, like a coolness or crispness in the air, I'm not talking about like snow and freezing weather, but just a bit of crispness mm-hmm. actually is very, very calming for our bodies as well. Mm-hmm. So as matches as possible, whether it's this thing of like you're holding your baby and you're wanting them to go to sleep and they are crying, or it's just a point in the day where you just need a bit of air, just stepping outside for a few minutes can really, really be helpful. Another thing that I think we often forget about is that just like babies, when your baby is crying, what's the first thing that you do? You give them a nurse them, you breastfeed them, or you give them a bottle, or you give them a pacifier or something like that. And one of the reasons is because sensory components of our mouth can be very calming for us. Mm. So just like you would give your baby to nurse them or to give them a bottle, give yourself some water, some cold water specifically can be very calming, or even something hot, something that you're like sipping on or a sipping bottle that relaxes, it opens up that valve and kind of relaxes our sensory systems. And then also things like having crunchy food. Like I know often we have this thing where there's a point in the day where we know we're like teetering at the end. For me right now, it's like that just before bedtime time. But I remember at one stage, it was like 5 o'clock on the dot every single day. Right. And if you can for yourself, like make sure that you've thought about, can I make myself something like a good cup of tea to drink at that time? Or can I give myself a crunchy snack? Crunchy snacks also, as you are like chewing, that's activating your proprioceptive system within your mouth again, which is again, just like opening up that valve and just actually helping you to bring yourself down. So I think those are the main ideas that I wanted to share today. I do have a quiz that people can check out that gives them a little bit more of an idea of their own individual sensory makeup and what are maybe the areas that are like most triggering for them. But the main thing that I want to say is that, you know, this phase, especially with newborns, it is sensory overwhelming. It isn't something that you're making up. Right. It isn't something that only you are experiencing. Of course, each of us might experience it at a higher or lower degree, but it really is a very big season of a lot of stimulation. So just having grace for yourself within that as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, thank you for that. What I think is so important about what you're describing is, I mean, obviously that there are things you can do. There are sort of interventions, if you will, that even can let out just a little bit. But the understanding, in some ways, the how and the why those things are helpful brings a different depth to like, oh, I'm just going to have a drink of water. I think it allows for more, I guess, intentionality into doing those things. Like you have a purpose for it and the effect is known. It's not just like, I'm just going to throw something at the wall and see what works. Although please do that. It's like, find out what works. But going outside, there's a purpose. Having that drink of water, there's a purpose. And I think for me anyways, as I'm hearing it and thinking about, you know, doing that for myself, that brings this whole other depth to it. It's Absolutely. Just not this little thing. It's an impactful thing.
Mm. You know, I often bring this back to kids in terms of movement. Like, I don't know about everybody else who's listening's children, but my kids, if they don't move enough, like we know about it, right? Yeah. You experience it full throttle in the house. Yeah. So it is something that we, when they were younger and at home with me, I made sure that we got out and we moved, like come rain or shine, we had to move. It was imperative. And the thing is that we also actually as adults have biological movement needs.
Yeah,
it's so easy to forget when you are so focused on caring for someone else. But we have like real needs that need to be taken care of as well. So I think that when we understand that this, like just like getting your kid out the door, if you know that they need to move, you know that you're going to pay for it if you don't do it. So you're willing to go through like the agony of getting out the door. And sometimes it's that as well for us. We just need to like give ourselves enough motivation to just start the motor, right? Like if it's going for a walk, just start the motor, even if there's a bit of resistance, like just getting that step out and knowing that this like small drops of caring for ourselves They have a big pool at the end. It's not just a glass of water or a small walk. It's like that dripping into this thing of caring for ourselves.
Absolutely. So you mentioned before that you have a quiz, you have a way for people to understand a little bit more deeply what's going on for them. Can you talk a little bit about that and how they can find it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the biggest steps is also just really understanding what is it for me, that not, it's not like this gray fuzz of everything is overwhelming, but is it specifically in an area of sensory development, not development? I always say development because of children, but area of sensory processing that I could be supporting more. So we have a quiz. I think we'll have it linked below. People can come and do it. It's just a couple of questions. And then it gives you some follow-up and information about that specific area and what can support, like if you are like me, an auditory person, that auditory overwhelm is really the place that you land. There are specific things in terms of that that can be really helpful. But for people that are overwhelmed more in terms of visual, there are different techniques that might work better for you. So you are more than welcome to come and do that quiz and yeah, find some help in the results, I hope.
Thank you so much for sharing this. I really love how you are providing a deeper understanding to the why things are overstimulating and that there's a reason. It's just so empowering, I think, for people to have this information and then a direction what to do about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. And it's been a pleasure having this conversation.
Thank you so much for being here. You can get connected with Holly at otholly.com or on Instagram, ot_Holly. And if you'd like to understand more about how you are overstimulated, you can definitely check out the quiz that she offers. Share this episode with any parent who might be overstimulated by this transition into parenting and parenthood. And also go to wellmindperinatal.com/courses, where you can find the courses that I offer that can help you understand a bit more about what might be happening for you in the early postpartum. I appreciate you for being with us. Until next time. Please find the Mom and Mind podcast on momandmind.com or wellmindperinatal.com, where you can also find access to my free online mini course that is specifically designed for people experiencing anxiety in the postpartum period. Or you can learn more about the 3.5-hour self-paced course that I created just for managing postpartum stress. You can also connect with us on social media at Mom and Mind on Instagram and Facebook. Thank you for tuning in and learning more about perinatal mental health.
Oh, hey, everybody.
It's us, Blair and Molly, your old pals from Toddler Purgatory. Two moms who are also actors, who are also creative beings, who sometimes feel stuck.
And this is our new podcast, Unsticking It with Blair and Molly. What happens when your creative spark just seems to disappear? Gone.
Poof. Bye.
See ya. What happens when life gets in the way of your creativity instead of nourishing it? That's what happened to Molly and me. We felt like the thing that drove us creatively stopped working and impending doom had in fact impended.
Totally. So we decided to do something about it. And that was steal ideas about getting unstuck from the most creative people we can find. We talked to guests about how to break through the mucky, gluey, sticky wall that can get between you and your creativity. We hear about their journeys, their successes, their challenges, and even their bougie coffee shop orders.
And we're not just talking Bob Ross type paint on paper artists here, though we talk to them too. We're talking to actors, creative directors, dancers, and people who are working hard to be their best creative selves in a world that can sometimes feel real uncreative.
We all have something to teach each other, so let's steal their ideas together.
Join us, won't you, as we deep dive into how to unstick ourselves from the life gunk that can get in the way of our creative freedom. Pandemics, school calendars,
world events, lack of sleep. Oh, get out of their life gunk.
And let's get back to your best creative self. Subscribe to Unsticking It with Blair and Molly.
You're not going to want to miss an episode.
Unsticking It with Blair and Molly, because sometimes life sucks. Unsticking It.